The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
This is Vince Russo's The Brand.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to 8 Days a Week. I'm Vince Russo. I'm here along with Jeff Lane. This is a little show called 8 Days a Week. This is the show, bro, where we highlight all of the shows that are available to you at russosbrand.com. We have multiple shows with many, many different personalities. Pennies on the dollar, no long-term commitment. You get to hear the views of several people in the industry. We piggy that back with patreon.com/RussoTWC, where you get a whole menu of other shows. So you have your pick of what you want to listen to on The Brand. What's going on, Jeff Lane?
Not too much, man. And we're live on Twitch. You can join us every Monday morning around 10 Eastern for the recording of this show live. Twitch.tv/Vince Russo Live. Nathan Vaughn with a giant 1,000-bit cheer. And, of course, the Realm Network shows that you mentioned at russosbrand.com. You said no long-term commitment. We mean it. You can opt out at any time, guys. You get these shows and many more in video and audio. If you prefer to listen to audio on the go, Realm Network gives you your own private RSS feed to pop into your favorite podcast app. Just go to russosbrand.com. Right at the top, click subscribe to the Realm Network. DJ Mad Dog with 35 bits.
Jeff, I found out something very interesting this morning.
Okay.
I was on WrestlingInc.com and I noticed Alexa Bliss made a comment about bra and panty matches.
Something to the effect of she respects the women, but she wouldn't do those matches or something like that, right?
Yes. And then Gail Kim, had a comment about, you know, that was traumatic for her and when she had to do a bra and panties match and she never felt like she can't say no. First of all, I got to tell you something. I love Gail Kim. And, you know, I've talked about this a lot. The mentality of talent thinking that they can't say no. I just want to say, bro, when I was writing, anybody could have said no. And people did say no. And I can remember specific angles that some people were uncomfortable with. And when they expressed that to me, we ex-nayed those angles. Okay, so like there's this mentality in wrestling. And, you know, bro, maybe this holds true with Vince McMahon and other people. But there's this mentality in wrestling. If you don't do what they say, you know, then it's going to be held against you. Your career's over. And maybe that's so. That's so. That never happened on my dime. So, you know, Jeff, something very interesting happened. I said to myself, okay, bro, now is this how they're going to speak out on Vince Russo? Now we're bringing up the bra and panty matches again.
Well, they have to look at the facts first, because I guarantee you they did more of those matches after you left than when you were there.
That's what I want to talk about. So I'm like, you know what, bro? I never really remembered booking a lot of bra and panty matches, but that name always seems to get associated with me. Now, bro, I can remember an evening gown match, but I could tell you an evening gown match was a derivative off of the tuxedo match. And they were doing tuxedo matches in the WWE long before I ever started working there. So I remember watching tuxedo matches. I can remember one between Whippleman and Howard Finkel. They were doing those, bro, long before I got there. So like the evening gown matches was kind of the female version of that. So then I'm saying to myself, you know what, bro? I don't really remember booking like bra and panty matches. I don't remember really doing that. So, bro, I looked it up, Jeff, and I found the site where I just put in bra and panties matches. And, bro, the history of all the bra and panty matches came up. Like on this site, bro, there is, let's see. Oh my God. There is 73 bra and panty matches. Okay. Now, first of all, Jeff, I want to say the first one. Okay. I never knew this until now, but this was at New Blood Rising, which I know I was a part of, August 13, 2000. This was Major Guns defeated Miss Hancock in an ROTC match. Okay. Now, bro, I swear to you, they say in this article that ROTC was meant to stand for rip off the clothes match. Jeff, I swear to you, my right hand to God, that is the first time I have ever seen that. An ROTC match was supposed, in my mind, was a hardcore match where they were going to beat the shit out of each other because it was Major Guns' character. I don't know if the announcer said that during the match. I don't know if this person assumed that, but I swear to you, that's the first time I'm reading that.
Well, that's interesting because there's none in WWE before that, which means he wouldn't have written any in WWE.
No, this was WCW.
Right. If that's the first one. So there was none in WWE.
So, Jeff, and then there's one. Tigress defeated Tori Wilson in a Safari ROT match. This was October 9th, 2000. I had left by then.
Right. Okay. Troy with 100 bits.
Bro, the rest of them start October 2000. I was gone from the WWE. I was not responsible for one bra and panties match in the WWE. Now,
is there any in TNA?
Well, yeah, there. Now I remember this one. They have one in TNA, bro, and it was called a leather and lace match, and it was between Velvet Sky and Angelina Love. It was called Leather and Lace Match, and I remember that. That was April 12th, 2010, bro. That's it. That's it. That I'm going down this whole entire list, and that's all I was involved in. The bra and panties matches started in the WWE after Ed Ferrara and myself left, and I'll tell you probably why. Well, I don't know. I don't know why, but I don't know who booked them. I don't know who booked them. But, bro, that's the thing people got to understand about me and Ed. Bro, we were guys like in our mid-30s. You know, bro, we had other jobs. We had been around the block. We were both very happily married. I had a family. Ed was married at the time. Ed still is married. Bro, we didn't get off on that shit. I mean, it's not like, you know, we were putting the girls in this position and we were booking that shit because we got off on it. So I don't know who was booking all these bra and panty matches in the WWE from the time we left and on. And I saw there were a lot of them, but my God, bro, like they had almost convinced me it was me, because every time that gets brought up, my name is associated with it. And it wasn't until this morning, because now, you know, speak out. Vince told a listener he had a hot wife. So speak out. So now I'm like, okay, bro, is this what we're going to go down this road now? But I knew in the back of my mind, bro, we didn't book freaking bra and panty matches.
Yeah, I can remember. They got way, way more sexual after you left. They had like pillow fight matches, the girls wrestling in the beds and the Edge and Lita sex show. And there was way more of that stuff after you left. I mean, other than you and Ed implied a lot of things, except for Sable, of course, but that was a pay-per-view and that was her idea. You know, you talk about never forcing anybody to do that. From a lot of stories I heard, it changed after you left. You know, they made the girls do those matches.
Yeah, I have no idea. But I could tell you, bro, if we booked an...
Yeah, the hot lesbian action, good call, Wanted Dead. Forgot about that. That was way after you.
Yeah, if we booked a evening gown match or anything, bro, I mean, I just can tell you, no woman ever told me they were uncomfortable doing it, and we did it. Bro, you got to understand, even though like this speaking out movement in 2020, bro, back in the day, when I was happily married and I had three children, and I kind of realized what, once I understood what the wrestling business was, Jeff, I could tell you this, I always had my back. You know, I didn't know in 20 years they were going to be calling people out and shit. I didn't know that, but I always had my back because I had a freaking family and I had a wife and I had children, and I was not going to get in anything that would have got me in any kind of trouble. Bro, I remember, Jeff, so many times, you know, I would have to go in the woman's locker room. I would have to go, you know, at TNA, the women had a trailer. And, bro, I'd have to find them during the day to do pre-tapes and all that shit. Bro, I always was so cautious and so, you know, just so, you know, careful and so respectful of them. And I say this all the time, bro. I don't, when I worked with these beautiful, beautiful women, bro, I felt like they were more like daughters than, you know, attractive women. I mean, that's how I looked at them. So like, bro, I knew back then, bro, you got to be really, really careful in everything that you do. So that's why I'm saying, bro, you know, again, these bra and panty matches and shit like that, I did not remember. And then sure enough, I go back and I look. And bro, to me, the most sexual thing that was ever done on my dime, okay, bro, was the bikini contest and Sable. And you guys know the story. That was 100% her. Yeah, I mean, bro, you know, I had no idea she was going to do that until, you know, Mark smartened me up. She was not told to do that. You know, that, but to me, that was far and away the most sexual thing that was ever done on my dime.
Yeah. All they have to do is go back and watch the Raws after you left, you know, especially in the early 2000s. It was really sexual. And I remember like the Dawn Marie stuff with Tori Wilson's dad. Like there was a lot. I mean, all they got to do is go watch it. The evidence would not back up anything at all that you and Ed were the sexual writers there. If anything, you were the tamest ones until the PG era.
Yeah. So I wanted to clarify that up, bro. And like I said, that ROTC, bro, like that was not what that was. That's the first time I've ever seen that literally in ever. Ever. And like I said, I don't know if one of the announcers said it to a match. I don't know if somebody assumed that's what it was, but ROTC was Major Guns' gimmick. I mean, that was her gimmick. And like I said, bro, it looks like that was the only one that I was involved in. And bro, I can tell you this too. They probably wound up, you know, beating the shit out of each other and ripping each other's, you know, close up. That probably wasn't even the way the match was promoted. I can't remember from 20 years ago, but I could certainly tell you that the ROTC did not stand for that. But, you know, and so like I said, bro, it's like, man, I get associated with so much shit that I'm sitting here, I'm saying, bro, we never wrote bra and panties match.
Yeah, that's a eye-opener right there, because I never really thought about it. You know, you think about the Sable stuff, but yeah, that makes perfect sense when you really sit down and you look at all the shows we've done watch alongs for when we used to do them on the brand, and now we're doing them on Patreon. We haven't seen any of that stuff. None.
Yeah. So, all right, bro, 8 days a week. Let's go through the week on the brand, bro. How do we start it off?
Well, we start off on Monday, castrating the Marks. And in this clip, we're listening to Brian Alvarez talking about how Paul Heyman had an impossible job.
I think that Paul Heyman did the best that he could. You know, there were a lot of things on Raw. I mean, every week you can watch Raw and you can pick apart this and you can pick apart that. But anybody who's putting all of the blame on Paul Heyman, or like if SmackDown gets better, anybody who puts all the praise on Bruce Pritchard, it's all Vince. If there's stuff that you like, it's Vince. If there's stuff that you don't like, it's Vince, because their ideas aren't being used the way they want them to be used. Or they start their idea and then their idea finishes in a totally different way because Vince came up with some wacky way to switch everything, or he forgot it, or he didn't like it, or this guy didn't get over, or whatever. It's an impossible job.
Mm. Yeah, it was sure impossible for me and Ed, bro. Bro, how does he know? Like how you know he?
You know how he knows? You know where what he's saying is coming from.
Exactly, bro. Either that or like, how would you freaking know unless somebody is giving you that information? And let me tell you something, Brian. It's not impossible. I worked with Vince McMahon. I was connected to Vince McMahon's hip from March of 1997 to September of 1999. Connected to the guy's hip. I can tell you, bro, it's not impossible. And bro, maybe it wasn't impossible. You ever think it wasn't impossible because of this? Maybe me and Ed actually presented Vince with good shit. You ever think of that, bro? Maybe we actually presented him with good shit that he liked. But how can you say it's impossible when at one point the structure and the system was cooking on all four burners? Now it wasn't impossible then?
That's what I'm saying. They have different narratives depending on who the person is.
Yeah.
And we pretty much covered it in that clip, Vince, but the double standards with the agendas with these guys, we see it when it's you, it's a different narrative than everybody else. It can't be both ways. Either Vince McMahon is a genius that filtered all of your crappy ideas and made everything good, or he's the guy that made Paul Heyman stuff bad. How can he be the same guy?
Yeah, Jeff, I had mentioned on the show, bro, here's the difference. Here's why Ed and I were successful. Here's what Ed and I did that I can guarantee you has not been done since. And this is why it was never an issue working with Vince. Okay. Ed and I would write an entire show. We knew Vince. We knew where he would try to poke holes in the show. We knew it. Between the two of us, we knew it. We would make sure that the show was just as bulletproof as possible. Then we would present him with the entire show. So, bro, he had a show that was pretty much 90% perfect. And I've said this all the time. Then Vince would put his little nuances in the show. He would take our show and he would make it a little bit better. These guys don't do this because I'm going to tell you, number one, they don't know how to write a formatted television show. They don't. They have no idea, bro, how to write a formatted television show. You got to write the show. You got to place the commercials. You got to time the show. You got to time the matches. You got to time every single segment. And we gave Vince a final project, a final product. We handed it to him. Here's your show, Vince. We didn't go to Vince with an idea here and an idea here and an idea there. We gave him complete shows. And we were very thorough in those shows. And there wasn't many holes he could put, shoot in those shows. They didn't do that when we left, bro. They didn't do that. And that's why it has not worked since. It always goes down to, bro, doing the freaking work. You know, bro, it's a lot of fun to write a show. It's a lot of fun to be a booker. All that is fine and dandy, but bro, there comes a time you got to sit down with the show and spend hours on the show with the details and the timing and the placement. That's the work nobody wants to do. That's why we did it, bro. That's why Vince went for 95% of our stuff.
Moving on to Tuesday, talks with Taylor Hendricks. Taylor had on this week Casey Catal, a fellow pro wrestler, and here's a clip from that episode.
Tell people what it is like, because I only recently in the last year came out about, having lung disease and how it's changed, basic everyday things, but also how I approach wrestling. Yeah. What is it like for you having an autoimmune disease and trying to be in such a physical and demanding sport and industry, essentially?
Yeah, it's really hard on my body a lot more than, you know, the normal. I mean, it's really hard on everybody's bodies, what we do. But for mine, I have a lot of really bad joint pains. So that like kind of spikes everything a little bit more. And at first, I didn't really want to tell anybody. I kind of kept it to myself because I didn't want the judgment. I didn't want people to treat me differently. I'm sure you can relate to that. And it was like, you know, I wanted to be true to myself, but I also wanted to be treated like everybody else. And yes. I didn't want people to be like, you know, oh, either she's making excuses for what she's doing, or we don't trust her in there because she's not feeling well. So it took me a while, and I ended up making some connections. And again, to my better judgment, I think I opened up a little too soon, but I'm glad in a sense that I did when I announced it. And it was really hard for me in my training school because I remember being like not feeling well, and then, you know, being on medications that were making me really sick, and then running into the bathroom, throwing up, and then going back in the ring and not telling anybody, and just, you know, trying to disguise it. And that was making it 10 times worse and so much more stressful on my body. So it's a struggle, you know, and I'm sure you can relate to that. It is a struggle, but I try to keep myself as healthy as I possibly can. And I love what I do, and I'm going to keep doing it until I can't. So, you know, the people that are telling me like, you're sick, you shouldn't be doing this. It's like, you know, like screw you because I'm going to keep doing it. I feel great right now. Like I have my days, but you know, I know my body better than anyone else's, and this is what I love to do. So.
Yeah, I understand that 100%. You know, in a lot of other like athletic industries, like football and whatnot, a lot of like athletes, they don't, I guess what I'm trying to say is a lot of athletes, they don't always get the opportunity to say, okay, I'm ready to leave now. You know, a lot of times teams or the industry as a whole decides that for them. So they don't get to leave on their own terms. Sometimes they don't even get to play on their own terms.
Right.
You know, and the career of a pro athlete is so much shorter than the regular average career, you know, that can span 60 years before right. someone retires. And, you know, firsthand, like the average span of a pro wrestler or an NFL player, so much smaller.
Yeah.
Like 15 years, yeah. Like, you know, you're lucky 20 years and then you have to be ready for retirement. It's like, what?
Yeah.
That makes no sense. Like when you think about it, in 20 years, if you were like a 20-year-old, you're not even legally allowed to like drink yet. But in the 20-year span, you're supposed to have all the money and all of the things that you're supposed to have to last you until you're almost 100. What?
Right. Yeah. It's wild. It's wild.
But if you do make it all that time later to close to 100 years old, like, do you really want to look back and regret not doing something that you love for as long as you could while you were blessed enough to do so? Like, that's what gets me. And I'm like, you know what? I may have restrictive lung disease, but I got to go to WWE. I got to go to TNA. I got to go all over the place and do all these amazing things and have all these opportunities that are on my terms. You know, so that makes the stuff a little bit more worth it. And I know that you can feel the same way where it's like, well, I'm living it on my terms. That makes me happy because it's not according to anybody else but me. It's the one thing I can control in my life. It's my success. It's my happiness. So let me do this. It's my illness, not anyone else's, that you know, I'm interacting with. So it's on my terms. And you're getting to succeed. And other people that may have similar conditions are going to be able to see you succeed as well. So you are going to be part of someone else's survival guide. And that to me is amazing.
I love that. I love that. And I've had people reach out to me and be like, you know, I have this or I have that. And, you know, seeing you push through things, you motivate me to push through things. And that's amazing. Like if you're impacting one person's life just by sharing your own story, it's incredible what we can do. So I'm actually very happy that I did.
Also last Tuesday, Mr. versus Mrs., a new episode released with Vito and Noelle. And here is a clip from the latest episode.
It was an all-white Miami party where you have to dress fabulously in all white.
You're supposed to wear all white. It's a South Beach party. So everybody got in their all-white outfits, but Vito didn't know. We just told him, wear white and don't go to softball because you get tired in the afternoon.
Anyway, So what happened was we get dressed. I had to be somewhere. We had to be there by 5:30, pack a bag. I thought we were going to go sleep out at a place.
But no place is really open, but Vito didn't right. know that.
So, but I just said, okay, I went along with it. I didn't question nothing. I just slept. So when we walked in, all our friends were dressed in white. There were drinks poolside. And then the biggest thing was I had a sushi chef.
Vidi, what did you think? Are you surprised? It's a video. Are you surprised?
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Happy birthday, Edie.
He's got his own personal sushi chef today.
Oh, man.
His friends all came out. Little Edie.
You got a birthday balloon?
Look.
Thank you. Oh, my God.
Look, she got you a birthday balloon.
Are you going to eat it?
This is almost as good as your Anna Elsa party, Vito.
This is a surprise party, boy. Let me tell you.
You
gotta
secret.
Thank everybody for coming. When there's a party for Vito, you know there's a party for Vito.
He's making some sushi for you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Happy birthday, dear Vito.
Edie.
Happy birthday to you. Yay. Blow out your candle.
Am I holding?
No.
I'm
going to
spit on that cake. Oh, no.
Come on, ready? One, two, three. Yay!
Yay.
His own personal sushi chef I hired to make him all his favorite sushi.
All my favorite sushi. So we had poolside drinks. We had a white party. We had an excellent time. We had other food there that was excellently done. It goes up there in the top five parties at Big V all time.
I think this has to be number one. Has to be. Because we've been going for a month and Vito had no idea. We had him at his own food tasting for his party and he didn't even know. He thought we were just trying something new. So we had foods delivered and then we're like, Vito, this is good. What do you guys think of this? From a restaurant that we go to, but we never tried these other foods in the menu. So here's Vito. He's like, oh, I like these noodles. Here's Lily Fox. Vito likes the noodles. That's what we did.
Okay.
We did this for a month. We've been testing different foods, asking him different questions he didn't know about, like having these weird conversations, hiding things in bags, and we're going back and forth, sneaking stuff into the diaper bag for the baby. Like, this has been going forever. So you guys are the reason that we had this party because Vito, you voted. So here's one example of how you guys actually affect our lives. Vito had the best party of his life because you guys voted to let me and Lily plan the party. So should thank the people. They did you an up. They did you a solid.
From the people's album to the people of the Russo brand, thank you.
Wednesday on the Raw and SmackDown review, you, Stevie Richards, Bin Hameen in this clip, are talking about Bray Wyatt and the change back into his original character.
Stevie, this blows me away. Somebody, Stevie, you got to give me an explanation for this. Bro, can you actually sit there and tell me we didn't know what to do with the Fiend, so we have to go back to Bray Wyatt, who we didn't know what to do with, to put Stevie like... Stevie, this can't be. We don't know what to do with the Fiend. So we're going to go back to another character we didn't know what to do with. What, bro, seriously, either Bray Wyatt had to say, I'm not going to Florida because of COVID, bro, like this is, we're going to go, we're going to take a character that's over, that, that we're in the process of killing and we're about 75% done, and we're going to revert back to a character that we've already killed. Stevie, this has to be punishment, because if the, if anybody is this incompetent, they should be fired on the spot.
It's just amazing that you can, because when you got, when you're punished or you have heat, they just leave you out on a lurch and make you look stupid. And they, I mean, this is the confusing part, because what they're giving the Bray Wyatt character to get over with, of course, we saw the reptilians and all the other like symbolism. You have all this high level, deep stuff that's not Bruce. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Bruce writes that stuff. Who knows? You have all this stuff that sets him apart from everybody else, but then you don't know what to do with him. I don't understand the where it falls off the cliff. You have three now, three of the most over characters in the history of WWE that could have been all three of them at any time or another. The original Bray Wyatt character should have been world champion, should have ended the Undertaker streak, should have had the torch passed. Then you have the Bray Wyatt Mr. Rogers, which is a creepy ass heel on its own, mixed in with the Fiend. You combine those two. Now, I don't know, dude.
But that, Stevie, hold on. Do you obviously know the answer to that? We have to know the answer to that. Those three characters that you pointed out, come on, Stevie. Does, would Vince understand any of them? Any of them, bro? No,
not understanding to me means that you wouldn't see one one-thousandth of the content that we see. The Firefly Funhouse wouldn't even exist.
That's true.
The vignettes wouldn't exist. Then the symbolism and the puppets to put all that effort into it. That's what it is. If Vince doesn't get it, he's not going to waste time, energy, and money on it.
One bitch project. Never saw the light of day, right?
Yeah, it never did. But this is... this has seen the light of day for a long time in multiple different forms. So that's what we got. It's like, dude, this is a documentary that should be a show on its own.
Yeah.
Figuring out where the cliff falls off, who has heat with, who doesn't believe in it, then why this, dude, this is like one of wrestling's biggest mysteries.
Yeah. Ben?
Yeah, it absolutely is unfathomable to me for them to go back, and that Bray is even allowing it. He should be like, no goddamn way am I doing this, dude. We talked about it, Stevie, in the locker room. You put it over that it's time for talent. We try to put the boys over. Talent must be held accountable for protecting their own business. And like, this is where we're going back to do something with Braun even further. Like, Braun is now gonna, the sheep mask didn't do it, but now we're going back to the origins. Oh, the fear of it all. When we already found the game. The game was a brilliant one. Bray Wyatt picks his target, brings them into the Firefly Funhouse to revisit their entire career, all the mishaps, all the wrestle crap, all the things that he can become from them, he can adopt from them and tweak their minds, where then we get one match or some cinematic spot, but we've killed 20 minutes in a pay-per-view and something where people go, that was worth my time because I watched all that shit that they made the references in there for. Bray's whole thing is about revisiting references of 2 to 3 decades, whether it be legends or guys who got fired and came back and did what, and being able to tell those stories in an all-encompassing lexicon in one segment on a payoff show. Instead, we're back to Cape Fear again. Like, because maybe they showed Vince that, and he's like, yeah, we're going back to that. I get that. Absolutely ridiculous. And they're still getting.
Now, you guys were talking about how, you know, you thought maybe he's getting buried or whatever. I kind of, like, got the impression they were trying to do the Mick Foley thing and have him have three characters, you know, that he switches back and forth. And do you think that's a possibility?
Well, I mean, bro, I mean, if it is, good for them, but that's going to take very sophisticated writing. And I don't know if they're capable of doing that. Now, there's no doubt in my mind Bray could pull that off. I mean, I think Bray is brilliant. I've been saying Bray's brilliant on here for the last 5 years. But that would take some very, very sophisticated writing and storytelling. And I don't know if they're capable of that, bro. Like, I really don't. I mean, bro, we're recording this show on Monday, so Raw hasn't aired yet because this show comes out on Thursday. But, like, bro, I'm watching the SmackDown. The promotion for Raw tonight is two contract signings. Like, bro, one isn't enough. Like, seriously, two freaking contract signings. Bro, that's how they fill time. We just need to figure out how to fill these 3 hours, put something on there. So when you start talking about sophistication of writing, I have no faith in them, bro, that they're capable of doing that. I mean, wait till you see the two contract signings tonight, bro.
Moving on to Thursday, Black and White, you and Stevie Ray. This episode, you guys were talking about the influence of black music. And in this clip, you're talking about rap.
And I swear to God, bro, throughout my 60 years on this planet, that is the only music I've never been able to wrap my head around. So I guess my question to you is, I understand it, bro. I could feel their pain. I really can. I know they experience that shit. Mm-hmm. But is that more of a detriment to other cultures that are listening to that music?
What you don't realize is when you put it in that perspective, Vince, it's not just a detriment to other cultures, because other cultures sometimes don't have a culture. That is a hip hop culture. So let's get that out of the way first.
Hey, explain that to me. Break that down for me, Stevie.
Like I said, a hip hop culture is something that people identify with. Now, culturally, when you're talking about white people, then you're just talking about a race of people, not a culture of people, because white people are so diverse many different sectors there are of white people. So that's what I mean by that. Okay. So, but not only that, it's more detrimental to my culture of black culture than it could ever be to yours. Because everything that you're saying, what do you think other people are saying? That if people talk that way about their own culture, how can they give a damn about themselves? And if I got inherent biasness within my heart, how can I have contrition for them? Do that make sense?
Oh, absolutely it does. It absolutely does, yeah.
So you can see the positives and negatives to it. Because when it comes to my people, African people, they are rhythmic by nature. That's why you hear the drum. You remember Azuma Nelson? He was a boxer. And you would hear the drums in the background that his corner would play for him. You know why? Because he could feel the rhythm as he boxed. Mm-hmm. That's how God made us. Rhythmic people. All the music that we have been talking about today is all from what the pain, the suffering turns into a certain rhythm. And you say, well, wow, Chuck Berry came up with this, or Little Richard came up with this, but you're so amazed by them. Why is that? Because they're rhythmic people and they have a certain a feel, vibe within themselves, because it comes from years and years and years of where they come from, or where their ancestry comes from. Okay, and that's why you went from rhythm and blues to soul to funk. You went through all those when they're all derivatives of each other. And it was like, okay, you get the Philly sound, you could get the Memphis sound, you could get the Detroit sound, you could get all these different sounds. You could even throw Sammy Davis Jr. in there, who's got the big band sound and all this other stage type sound, all coming from the same kind of people. Then you know what happened? It's cheaper to do R&B and influence another generation of people, because we can make a shitload of money on it. Because it tears down these communities, because people don't realize images are very influential. Words are very influential. When somebody talk about killing someone, somebody talk about how much weed I smoke, how much money I got, how many bitches and hoes I got. If you don't think that influences of people, and that's why it's been pushed on young people so much, and they don't even realize what it's doing to them mentally. Nothing happens on this earth by accident.
Why has it been pushed on the young people?
Yeah, I think you just need to sample other styles of rap, because a lot of the lyrics you talk about are in like 90s gangster rap, but there's a lot of other styles of rap that don't have those lyrics and are just genius.
Give
like
me some.
Poetry, Give me Tribe some. Called Quest, Black Sheep, Nas, Wu-Tang. I could go on and on. You need to listen to other artists and other styles of rap, and I think you'll really see that it's probably not all what you think it is.
Maybe I will do that, because I know my kids like Will and VJ really like the Tribe Called Quest. I know who they are. I've never listened to any of their music, bro.
Yeah. Good
but
stuff.
Yeah, I swear, bro, like I never really, really realized like the influence that black music had on me until like now, you know, especially I'm on this show with Stevie Ray, I'm always trying to pop them with singing, you know, old soul R&B songs and shit like that. And bro, it blows my mind. All the lyrics, I remember playing my 45s when I was like a freaking 10, 11, 12 year old kid. It blows my mind. And yeah, bro, it's not till I really started the show with Stevie. I was like, man, I listened to a lot of that stuff, man, you know, growing up. And that's why it's great to do that show with Stevie, because I could bring a lot of that stuff out and it's a lot of fun.
Moving on to Friday now, Lions, Tigers, Bears, and Disco. In this clip, we are talking about AEW suspending Sammy Guevara. Audio came out of a podcast he was on 4 years ago in 2016, and he was talking about he worked it as an extra at WWE. And he said, bro, Sasha Banks, oh my God, when I was at WWE the other week, I wanted to just go effing rape that woman. Okay? Obviously, he didn't rape anybody. It was a joke. My opinion was dumb. It's not funny. Whatever. People make those jokes all the time. So after this came out, he put out a statement. I've made stupid, inappropriate, and extremely offensive comments in my past. In my idiotic mind, I thought I was being funny and using words and terms that represent nothing but horror and pain. I am truly sorry for my hurtful words and actions, and I will never forgive myself. So AEW puts out this statement. AEW insists on doing our part to create a world of understanding and respect for humankind. We therefore strongly condemn the extremely offensive and hurtful words of Sammy Guevara. As such, effective immediately, Sammy is suspended without pay until further notice, and he has agreed to undergo extensive sensitivity training, and upon completion, his future status within the company will be reevaluated. During his suspension, his salary will be donated to the Women's Center of Jacksonville.
If I were him, I'd get a lawyer. If I were him, I'd get a lawyer. I would plant my feet in the ground. I'd defend myself on this. You're gonna suspend me and take away my pay and maybe go for sensitivity training for one sentence I said 4 years ago in a podcast? Like, what the f*** is that accomplishing?
Wow.
Like when punishment fits the crime, like crime and punishment, what is the purpose of punishment? To deter future crime. Okay? What on earth did he do that just could not be as simply rectified as a simple apology? We're fine going forward.
And he did apologize.
And it's like, and they're still suspended. But Tony, that company right there, I can just tell they have no clue what they're doing. No clue what they're doing at all. Yeah. They're just playing for the social media mob. You know, their inclusivity fan base, the outrage mob. We're gonna speaking out. We stand, you know, we stand against abuse of women. You know, so Sammy Guevara, you're suspended without pay for 4 years ago. You
know, and forced him to go with
sensitivity
training.
I mean, this is ridiculous. I mean, why am I laughing at this? The absurdity is like on a level of like, so you know, like if he got a lawyer, he would easily get out of this. He should get a lawyer and say, look, why is my pay suspended?
He's probably getting advice not to, and you don't want to burn your bridge.
Something I did not do. He's being punished for something he did when he was not under employment for AEW. He's getting fined and how can they possibly do that? He's not getting punished by the law or anything. There's no, like, he didn't get arrested. He just said something 4 years ago while he was not employed. They're punishing him for stuff he said when he wasn't employed by them and financially hit him in the pocket. How can they do that?
Well, they do it.
Jericho should tell Sammy, stand up for yourself and don't let them take your money over this. It's ridiculous.
Well, that's the whole thing. They can do it if you allow them to do it. So if he's going to allow them to do it, why shouldn't they do it? He's allowing them to do it. So
and he's got to go to sensitivity training.
Yeah, you could use it.
For a bad joke.
I mean, come on.
4 years ago.
Bro, if he's got to go to sensitivity training for one bad joke, can you imagine how many years Glenn would have to go? Bro.
Let me tell you what's happened in politics, wrestling, social media. Bro, we're revealing just how stupid people in this country are. Just the level of the lack of intelligence.
Yep.
Like in the lack of reason and logic and common sense and issues and stuff. I mean, that just we're just going to jump in the herd, jump in the herd mentality, the mob mentality. We're just going to follow them because they're. And I'm like, bro, well, they're wrong.
I was just reading before I came out here. Okay, bro, before we came on this show, I was just reading the Dixie Chicks, who are making a comeback.
Yeah.
Had dropped the word Dixie because of the Southern reference. So they are just now the Chicks. So now I'm wondering, is Dixie going to change her name? And what will she change her name to?
Let me tell you something. All this stuff does, okay, when they're doing this, it's like who are you doing this for? Why are you changing?
Do you know how many of these hypocritical assholes tweeted them, fire him, fire him, fire him?
Right.
Like, these assholes have never said anything dumb.
It's just the level. It's like, why are you having to change your name for the Dixie Chicks? And she's like, well, they're like, oh, because the name Disky is Southern offensive. I'm like, to who?
Yeah.
Because people have been educated and grown up. There's this perception that when you're part of the mob mentality and the cancel culture, you have this perceived sense of heightened intelligence. Like, you think that you're smart and you have to do these things to protect people that are dumb, that don't understand. Like, you protect me. And, bro, all it's really doing is showing how stupid you are. That you're having trouble comprehending these things. If you hear the name the Dixie Chicks, it gives you a racist slavery connotation. I mean, bro, come on. Like, who actually is thinking like that? Yeah. And the answer is hardly anybody, except this little group of people that are just yelling and screaming at people on the internet every day. And it's just, I don't understand why we give into these people. And you got guys like Tony Khan that's given into, like, oh, he's given into this outrage mob for bro. Sammy Guevara should definitely get his money back. There's no way you can financially penalize him for something he did when he was not with that company.
This is what gets me about the hypocrisy of this. Listen to me first, and then tweet it.
Go ahead.
Sammy Guevara did not commit a crime. Sammy Guevara wanted to say how hot Sasha Banks was, and he used a dumb joke to convey that. He didn't rape anybody. Suspended. Go to sensitivity training. Mike Tyson raped somebody, and they just had him on their show. So it's okay to have somebody who actually raped somebody on the show, but you can't have somebody on the show that made a joke about rape 4 years ago. Like, it is so freaking hypocritical. Why? Because Tony Khan's a mark for Mike Tyson, and he's taking pictures with him and their buddies.
Yeah.
The guy legit raped somebody, and you're going to suspend somebody for making a rape joke after you had a rapist on your show.
Good point, Jeff. Hold on.
Yeah, ridiculous.
I've got to give you applause.
Oh, that's so hypocritical. It's absurd.
Good point. Jeff, good point.
Now, I don't know if you've seen, since we recorded that show, Cody Rhodes put out a tweet that Sammy will be back and he'll be a better man. And I'm like reading that and I'm like, I can't imagine being told that I need to be a better man for a bad joke I told 4 years ago. Like, this is just insane, man.
I know, bro. what are you going to say? It was a bad joke. It was a comment. AEW wasn't even born you know, when he made the comment. So now he's being punished by a company that wasn't even around when he made the comment. You know, bro, I know Sammy a little bit. I got to work with him one time. And, bro, like, there's no doubt in my mind, this kid would have made the call to Sasha. No, nobody had to tell him to do it. You know what I'm saying, bro? This kid made the call to Sasha Banks because when it came out and he realized what he had said, you know, he wanted to give her a call, and he did that. And, bro, that's not easy, man. I mean, you know, calling somebody when you know you were in the wrong about something is not easy to do. Sammy would have done that on his own. Sammy didn't do that because he was told to, but now he's going to be suspended from a company that he wasn't even working with, you know, at the time. And, ay vey, bro, you know, I mean, we have all said things in our life that we regret. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Every single one of us, man. I mean, sometimes your brain is, you know, reacts faster than your mouth acts faster than your brain does, especially when you're younger, bro. When you're
younger, he was 22.
Huh?
He was like 22.
Bro, when you're younger, you don't think about the shit that you say. It's not till you have life experiences that, you know, you register the words before they come out your mouth. That doesn't happen at 22, bro. So, you know, I mean, okay, Cody's going to be a better man.
Also on Friday, the franchise Shane Douglas has the Triple Threat podcast. Here's a clip from the latest episode.
And I think this is going to be a good thing for the industry, though, that in mass to finally let everybody understand that, you know, we throw around the talk. And before anybody slams on it, I'm going to preface this. The phrase locker room talk, right, or locker room speak. Understand that, not saying it's a mea culpa, but when you're in that locker room, you're on the road for God knows how many days and or weeks back in the day or months back in the day and, you know, blown off steam and trying to elicit a chuckle to raise everybody's spirits. And once that starts, you know, where does the needle move? You know, you make one unsavory joke. Somebody gets a little more tasteless. Somebody gets a little more tasteless, a little more tasteless. So I think it's going to be good for the industry en masse to realize that the world's a very different world than it was when I broke in. And, you know, that with these social medias, as we were talking before we came on the air, you know, by and large have cut out a lot of the news agencies and people are getting their news directly from these things that we're on right now, you know, in the social medias, you know, and in the world today, as we're watching again in the Twilight Zone out there, this stuff moves lightning quick and will be quickly forgotten, you know, as it was brought up until the next big thing hits and everybody, you know, projects their outrage. But, you know, suffice it to say, you know, thank God I'm an old guy and didn't have much access to social medias whenever I was younger and really don't have much lore to it today. Especially this pandemic, right? I mean, I don't know if it's been saving, but on Twitter.
No.
You know,
been hiding.
Not been hiding. been incredibly busy with this pandemic going on. You know, so, yeah, where we are today as a society has, for the first time in my life, left me speechless because, you know, there's a lot of good going to come out of it. But, you know, how many people in the process are going to be destroyed for being human beings? You know, again, I've already fessed up my sins. You know, I've said plenty of stupid things. The first person that can come on here and say, I've never made an unsavory joke. I've never said anything untoward about anybody. And I've never made any kind of stupid joke that I wish I hadn't made later. Come on. And we'll have you can guess the whole show and say whatever you want on the whole show. It's because the person doesn't exist. And remember, I talked about this before. The people who talk about how their shit doesn't stink usually the ones who have the smelliest shit. Witness one Jimmy Kimmel. right? Been throwing barbs for years about how perfect he is and walks on water and how everybody else is below him and how woke he is. And now we're finding out he's done blackface and used the N-word and all the rest of stuff. In other words, he's a human being. And but he held himself to a higher standard than both of you and me and anybody listening to this show. And so for those people, I think they should be held to a different standard because they've acted like their shit hasn't stunk for how long. I will tell you up front, my shit stinks bad. Trust me, if you've ever been in a hotel room with me. but you know, it's I can honestly say I've never hurt anybody. I've never stabbed anybody in the back. I've never intentionally or unintentionally, I think, harmed, because I don't make those kind of stupid comments about other people, you know, whether in jest or not. I've, you know, anybody will tell you, my, you know, for as much as I had a reputation in ECW of being a ribber compared to the guys that I was a kid in the dressing room with, I was a junior varsity ribber at that. And my ribs were more like the ha-ha kind of ribs, as Chris Candido would have called them. You know, never the shit in somebody's bag or, you know, cutting somebody's pants up or H-bombing somebody and, you know, doing things. I mean, those are the kind of ribs that I witnessed as a kid coming into the business. Suffice it to say, the industry is getting a big shakeout right now, and a lot of people are going to be held to account.
And, of course, we don't quit Monday through Friday. We go through Saturday, bucket full of chicken necks. Vince, back to the solo rants on the show in this clip. You're talking about the cops being called on kids playing football in the street.
Bro, somebody in Ohio called the cops because five black children, kids, were playing football in the street. You understand what I'm saying? Five black children were playing football in the street. Somebody in Ohio, some giggle dick, thought it was necessary to call in the police. Guys, I remember when I was growing up, we lived playing sports on the street. Bro, I remember, like, literally right after the sun rose, my friends would literally come to my house on their bikes so we could go play baseball at St. Margaret's of Scotland just as the sun rose. Bro, they would throw pebbles at my window in order to wake me up. I would get up, bro. We would all get on our bikes and we would all head down to the baseball field at St. Margaret's of Scotland. Bro, all day we played sports in the street. All day. All day. And bro, it didn't even matter what season it was. We played baseball at St. Margaret's of Scotland. We played stickball in the street. We played stick hockey. We played touch football. We played kickball. You name it, bro. From the time the sun rose till the time the sun set, we were in the streets playing sports. That's what's missing in the world today. Guys, five black kids are playing football on the street, and somebody from Ohio calls the police. The police show up on the scene. Three white police officers. Bro, you know what these three white police officers did, bro? You know what they did, bro? They joined in on the game. Can we talk about that, bro? Can we talk? Why are we talking about that? Five young black kids playing football on the street. Some dingleberry calls the cops. Three white cops show up and they decide, you know what? That looks like a lot of fun. We're going to join in on the game. We don't talk about that kind of stuff, bro. Bro, is there ever any good news on TV?
Now, I had not heard that story before you brought it up. That just blows my mind. With all the things that people talking about kids being bad, here's kids actually doing something healthy, first of all, playing, you know, being physically active, playing a sport, and they get the cops called on them. That's just absolutely ridiculous to me. But yeah, I remember, like you were talking about in the clip, playing in the street, you know, car, you know, you have to get off the street, let the car go by, then you get back on the street. And I can't believe that today people would call the cops on kids for doing that.
Yeah, that reminds me of that. I think it was that clip in who's those SNL guys? Garth and
Wayne's World.
Wayne's World, bro. When they're playing street hockey and the car keeps coming, you got to lift up the net. You got to put it through. Car coming, car. Yeah, I mean, bro, we played sports, man. I mean, from the time the sun rose, I am not kidding you. When I say the time the sun rose, bro, my friends used to come to my house on their bikes. And, bro, I'm talking about like 7 a.m. now when the sun's up and there's at least eight of them. And they would, you know, throw stones at my upstairs window to wake me up. And I would come down. We would get on our bikes. We would ride to the ball field. Bro, we'd start at 7 o'clock and we played on the streets until it was pitch black outside. We'd find a street light. We'd play on the street light, whatever season it was, you name it, bro. God, I know video games had a big thing to do with it, but I am so happy, bro, that I lived during that time, because playing with my friends all day long is just, it's a great memory that I'll always, always have, because it is not here anymore, bro. So when you get a group of black kids getting together and playing football in the street, which, bro, I swear to God, bro, when I see a father and son having a catch in the street today, I got a double take. I used to beg my father to catch with me like every single day. Bro, I can remember one time begging my father to catch with me, and it was dark out, bro. It was dark. And my father was like, you know, it's dark. I'm like, let's go. Let's have a catch. Bro, I'll never forget it. The first baseball he threw at me hit me right smack in the face because I couldn't see it. And I used to beg my father to catch me. We used to go down to the ball field. You know, he'd hit me fly balls in the outfield. Bro, think about it. When do you ever see a father having a son with his catch? I mean, I'm sure it still happens, but you never see kids playing. Bro, when's the last time you seen kids playing kickball or stickball or street hockey? When's the last time? Bro, we used to play street hockey in the bank parking lot, any freaking empty parking lot that we could find. Get the nets. Let's go, bro. We played. Where do you see that, bro? That's why, my God, bro, if I see kids playing football in the street, I'm stopping and watching those kids. I'm watching. The last thing I'm doing is calling the freaking cops, bro. Man, I miss that, bro, more than anything. That just does not exist today. And, bro, at the end of the day, that kept us out of trouble.
Nicholas Live 1 with 100 bits. Remember, guys, all these shows and many more in video and audio, very inexpensive, zero long-term commitment. You can opt out at any time. Troy with 100 bits, give us a shot. All you got to do is go to russosbrand.com, right at the top, click subscribe to the Realm Network.
Yeah, that is it, guys. And also remember, man, we have other shows that may be more appealing to you on Patreon, patreon.com/RussoTWC. Bro, you can get Russo's Brand and Patreon. You can get one without the other. Whatever you want to do, we make it very, very affordable to you. But as always, guys, check us out, russosbrand.com, patreon.com/RussoTWC. Thank you for joining us, guys. We will see you later on.